Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Monday Night Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw, the go-home show ahead of the Royal Rumble. I quite enjoyed this one.
Yeah, me too. I like to think, right, that our podcast is a bit of a Trojan horse. You know, there's like silly voices, a bit of fun, and then there's some analysis hidden in that you maybe weren't expecting. In reality, it's probably in reverse at this point. But I like to think that's one thing. Raw is a Trojan horse, with just more silly stuff inside. Just silly on top of silly. They cannot do big-time pay-per-view promotion anymore. We booked various different ways in which to do a win. We knew the bits that they might do silly and the bits they might do serious. It's one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. It's going to kick off the biggest business period of the year for them, historically, all that sort of stuff. This nonsense is all they know. I just didn't hate the nonsense.
It's so much better. It is exponentially better, in fact, when they just embrace the nonsense. It's difficult to gauge when exactly Raw was at its absolute worst, but legitimately, the most drab times I've ever had watching this TV show was when they have the temerity to think they're pro wrestling, like when Paul Heyman was booking 50-minute gauntlet matches without a finish, when they just put matches without finishes on there. It's like, you don't want to do matches. You don't want to do finishes. You don't want to do matches, much less finishes. Just be stupid WWE, because sometimes you have a performer who can kind of get the old quintessential WWE, like Chad Gable's evolving into right now. Just be stupid. Just be overtly, willingly stupid. Don't do what you can't do, and that's wrestling. So the less wrestling on these shows, the better, and there was a fair bit of bollocks on this one.
I really enjoyed the main event. I thought it personified everything you talked about there as well. And we did have some excellent wrestling as well on this show, mixed in with usual Monday Night Raw stuff. Let's dive straight into it, though, because we show open with that weigh-in, as you mentioned. Bobby Lashley, Brock Lesnar, they're going to be fighting for the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble. We'll be doing a live stream for it. Do join myself and Phil Chambers for that on Saturday night on our YouTube channel. We've got Postman Pierce and, for some reason, Corey Graves involved in introducing everyone. Bobby Lashley and MVP come out. Paul Heyman stops Corey Graves from introducing Brock Lesnar. He does it himself. Lashley's in gear you would expect people wearing if they were going to immediately take stuff off to be weighed. Athletic gear, basically. Brock Lesnar is wearing jeans, a sort of big flannel coat, and a black cowboy hat. And Corey Graves goes, not really appropriate attire for a weigh-in, Brock. And he went, what, do you want to get naked? Just love banter, Brock. Tells him to get on with it. Lashley weighs in at 273 pounds.
He doesn't, but...
No,
he doesn't.
Yeah. MVP calls him the almighty killing machine, closer to a god than a man. And he said he's going to gain weight after the title match. And I thought, that's a nice line. Here we go. What's he going to say? He's going to get 12 pounds heavier for that gold. And he went, he's going to gain the weight of the title when he puts the title on, because he's won the title. And I was like, oh... Didn't quite stick the landing there, but I get what you're going for. Lesnar takes off his hat, still wears everything else, and he weighs in at 286 pounds. Lashley's not happy about all this, saying that Lesnar's acting like a fool because he knows that he's going to lose on Saturday. This is going to be his shortest title reign to date. That's not a prediction. That's a spoiler. And Lesnar calls Lashley a comedian. He says, look, just picture it. Sunday morning, hot off the press. Lashley beats Brock in the Hurt Lock. Here is your new champion, Bobby Who. And he laughs, cackles to himself, and just walks off. Lashley fumes again, and the announcers talk about whether or not Brock is taking Bobby seriously. And what did you make of all this, Sige?
I would like it a lot more if I was sure that Lashley was going over clean, and he 1,000,000% isn't. So I'm kind of a little bit annoyed by the direction they're taking, if I'm being perfectly honest. I like big banter Brock as much as anybody else. I would like to think they wanted the absurdity of the idea of Brock Lesnar being naked on the scales more than they were leaning towards overtones of homophobia with that line.
Mm. Yeah.
I couldn't work it out, so I couldn't pop, even though Lesnar's delivery was quite delightfully deadpan. He's just so gifted at everything to do with sports entertainment. But I couldn't, knowing that company, it was probably the other thing. So I couldn't really enjoy it as a result.
Brock was probably the other thing.
Oh, God, I know. What annoyed me about this is that when MVP was giving it like the hype man, bigging up his guy, saying all these killer sort of sound bites that put Lashley over, I was buying it, I was believing it. And the whole point was that Lesnar wasn't. I just wish, given where we kind of know this is going, or just to have a little bit of Lashley's aura intact after the fact, that they just presented these guys as equals.
I think what I'd like to see, because I completely agree, there's going to be some sort of shenanigans, I hope, that leads to Bobby Lashley winning the WWE Championship. Maybe, you know, the Usos can't be involved in one match, but they can probably be involved in the other. But I hope the story prior to that, at least, is not just, well, Brock Lesnar's just battering him, he's better, he's got this match won. I want it to be the Goldberg match. Not, you know, necessarily he's going to beat him in 2 minutes or whatever, but Lashley straight out of the blocks and Brock Lesnar suddenly like, oh, really should have taken this a lot more seriously.
I think that's where it's going to go, but at the same time, just present it like you've got an opportunity here. Visually, Lashley looks legitimately more impressive than, of all people, Brock Lesnar. I just don't know why they're doing this telling stories route with it.
Yeah, I don't totally get this either. I'm not quite sure if, because like when Lashley says, oh, you're doing all this stuff because you're trying to obscure that you're scared of me, that's almost easier to buy than what Brock's actually trying to sell you, which is that he doesn't take Lashley seriously. Mm. And my worry is that the match is going to go that same way because that's the way the promos are. For them to think this is the story we need to tell worries me a little bit that they'll think we have to do it in the match as well. Also, and I think this is where they've gotten a bit like you can't not pop at that stupid hat and Brock's deadpan delivery and taking the hat off to get weighed. He's really good at this sort of stuff, but I just don't think it's fit as well. The whole point of him doing it against Roman is that you're supposed to disarm this guy that takes himself incredibly seriously. There is a time to stop that and actually take another guy seriously instead. Lashley was that guy. And it went so far that I think they've gotten lost in who this Brock character is. The little bit he manifested at the end to try and get under Bobby's, Bobby who was to get under his skin, who is this guy? Well, whoever he is, he still won the title in your imagined newspaper. If there was a story like Michael Hamflett wins the lottery, but like they've just spelled Hamflett wrong at the end and it says Michael Hills, oh, I still won the lottery. I'll take the newspaper headline. So I think that to me was an example of where they've kind of lost course with this Brock character a little bit. They love the funny visuals. They come up with the big daft ideas that you can't do when he's being serious, standing in the background, Brock. But yeah, I lost a bit of interest, and this was pretty basic WWE stuff. I don't think we were like fantasy booking wildly to suggest that having them take the tops off and be sprayed in baby oil was like, it's not a leap for WWE, and we didn't get that.
Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it, where they didn't try their hardest to sell this any more than they have done already, but they are just sort of relaxing, going, it's the Rumble. We could probably put almost anything on, and the fact they're just saying, here's Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar, and you might have seen the old moving graphics they've now got on Twitter for the match. You know, where they move about and then they freeze, and then it's there side by side. don't know why that always gets me, like, yeah, ready for that match, no matter who it is.
Definitely works as a SmackDown fist crossover.
Yeah, I hate my life when he said that.
That specifically works for, that doesn't do anything for me, but I you will definitely be speaking to...
Oh, look, it's Charlie Haas versus Jamie Noble, but they're moving.
Yeah. So WWE's back, actually.
Never left.
They follow that up with a rundown of the show and then a recap of Bianca Belair winning last year's Royal Rumble. Then she was in action against Queen Zelina, who came out and went, oh, the bloody Queen's going to win the bloody Rumble or whatever. It's a weird voice.
Are you me? No. Oh, blimey, I'm going to both feet must touch the floor.
It was a brief match. Zelina did get in some offense. She countered quite a lot of Bianca Belair's attacks. She got put down with a gorilla press and some suplexes. She goes for a code red, but Bianca Belair, because she's just a freak, stops that midair, powers out of it, and lifts her up KOD for the victory. And Corey Graves talks about Bianca Belair potentially becoming the first person in 24 years to win back-to-back Rumbles.
I thought this was very good because of how functional it was. Myself and Sidgwick over the desk the other day were workshopping a bit of a theory about why WWE live shows have been so quiet. Other than the first couple since the fans returned, it's the WWE selling the brand thing, eating itself all over again. They want to see the names on the posters, do their entrances. They maybe want to see a couple of signature moves or a couple of signature taunts and all that. But WWE has kind of forced its audience to lose interest in the matches. The matches themselves being so formula has aided that too. But by not going so long, you had all of Bianca Belair's star power and you could hear it. The fans were bang into her. And I don't want to like discredit Zelina Vega as the heel, because somebody's got to be the foil to that babyface. But Bianca Belair was feeling like a top babyface. It's not going to be the same in every building, but they were with her here. And the match didn't go on anywhere near long enough for a botch, anywhere near long enough to feel like a formula. And what you saw was the preservation of a star who you're supposed to be taking seriously on Sunday. These are the most basic of tenets, but WWE do it so rarely that it feels like a treat when we get it.
Nailed it.
I don't know why I said that. You know what? If I'm not mistaken, I believe they did something they don't normally do, WWE, last night, in that they didn't flog 5,000 tickets to an arena that could theoretically hold like 18,000-20,000. I think they ran a smaller show, and God damn it, that was reflected in the noise.
Yeah.
It wasn't this weird... Well, we'll just pretend we're bigger than we are to the absolute detriment of the atmosphere. And, you know, if it's complete church and mouse and church stuff, who cares? So, yeah, do this kind of building again, because the atmosphere was actually immersive somewhat.
Yeah, you definitely felt that throughout the night and early on in that match as well. Kevin Owens was backstage getting interviewed by... Kevin Patrick! Asked him about feigning an injury to defeat Damian Priest last week, and Owens was having none of that. He was very happy about handing Priest his first loss, but offended by the accusation that he feigned an injury. He was pointing out the back of his t-shirt read, "Just keep fighting." That's what he did then. That is what he's going to do now, and he's going to hopefully get himself a US title shot and just keep winning. Hopefully get himself a title shot. He did get a title shot on this show, and he was just going to keep fighting to win the title. Then we got the US title match, Kevin Owens versus Damian Priest.
Skip.
Thank goodness. Yeah, went to a DQ. Before we get to the five-star review, I do want to have a brief pitch, because we're going to talk about it in a minute as well. There was a couple of matches on the show that were bloody pointless. It was just, let's get loads of people in and go, oh, they could win the Rumble. They won't. They could win the Rumble. But they were just, you know, shilling for the Rumble. There was a women's match that followed this. There was the tag match later on in the night. But they really emphasized, especially in the men's match, you can't trust anyone. You know, the Mysterios, don't worry, we'll talk about that later. Street Profits, etc., etc. And all I thought was a bit of fantasy booking, right? Is Damian Priest in the Rumble? Yes. He is, isn't he? Uh-huh. So remember that classic bit of booking once where Randy Orton's the legend killer and he says the only legend I haven't killed is myself, and then he RKOs himself. Yes. What if Damian eliminates Priest? There we go. Right.
Can I say one thing about this match?
Yes.
I saw... like, at least three members of the audience in the background when this went to the DQ, because Priest got DQ'd for kicking too much ass.
See it coming a mile off, couldn't you?
Sort of three people literally hold their hands up in despair, and like one of them had like mini tantrums. Oh, you've done this kind of finish. Like, this is bad booking.
Yeah. All right, enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review review. Nailed it!
And this week's five-star review is brought to you by Cena underscore 62. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related for us to review, all you have to do is subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify. Leave us a five-star review and suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related, just like Cena 62, who writes, I've been a fan of the What Culture podcast for a few years now. I'm so thankful for it. For the longest time, all I knew about wrestling was modern WWE, but it was thanks to the detailed knowledge of both the Dadley Boys about not only companies outside of WWE, but also past wrestling promotions that really helped me broaden my horizons and learn that there is so much more to enjoy about this great sport.
I absolutely love that, you know. I credit Finlay Martin and Dave Meltzer for doing that to me. And I hold them in really high esteem because they genuinely like enriched my knowledge of pro wrestling and gave me some good times, basically. For me to be in that position, it's never lost on me.
It's total honour. It's because otherwise, people just think it's boring. So it's nice when it's nice when you're told otherwise. And I imagine Dave Meltzer gets that now and Finlay Martin did for decades writing Power Slam.
Do you ever get that where you're talking to someone about wrestling and they're like... How's things going in WWE then? And you're like, yeah, it's good. Like, you got the Rumble coming up, but there's this big new promotion, you know, it's coming through. AEW, that's where, like, Chris Jericho is now and blah, blah, blah. And you just see them glaze over. And you're like, no, stay with me.
The answer to that question is always...
We'll lead with John Moxley instead.
Yeah, granted.
The answer should always be, how much do you care about the answer? Yeah. Like, when somebody realistically asks you that. Because if they're not following up with... Undertaker's still doing it then. You know, well, if by doing it you mean introducing Pitbull, then yes, he is.
Mr. Worldwide.
By being an absolute miserable little bitch about the way his career turned out, then yeah, he's still doing that.
I want GCW to book him and Jarrett. Do we not have like... Well, you got Brian and Omega on your birthday.
Yes.
Sort me out, Jeff Jarrett and the Undertaker. Last Outlaw battle.
Jarrett goes over.
Of course, obviously. Guitar shot.
Right.
One guitar shot.
Cena 60 underscore 62 continues. For a five-star review, could you guys go back and discuss whatever you wish from WWE CW, as this was one of my first times I've ever watched pro wrestling. Thanks, you guys. Keep up the great content. So we've selected the excellent Mike Knox and Kelly Kelly storyline, or specifically the conclusion of that. So take us back to, what was this, December 2006, Michael Hanfler. What was going on in December for WWE CW?
I like that you were given the pick and mix of WWE CW and you went to the December to December post-show. You thought, I want to luxuriate in the lowest this brand could possibly be. The exact moment where I would say about 6 months, probably started about June, July, about 6 months of various fans of ECW from various... eras of ECW wanting this thing to be better than it was, finally giving up, and this was very much night one. ECW 2.0, that's what this was. Mm-hmm. Right, we've got December to December out the way. The show starts. I went and, because obviously we're going to talk about a clip that you've found on YouTube, but I went and had a quick skim of it on the network, and it opens with, it opens with Paul Heyman in tears. That is how the show opens. He's crying on he's floods of tears, and there's blood on his suit, and he was like, this was the big show's blood. This was my blood. Anyway, I'm gone. And he just walks off camera, and it's like, that's it for 5.5 years. He's just gone from WWE.
Is that it?
And that's wow. That's how it's gone.
Got on a plane after a shout-out match with Vince, and that was it for him.
The credits roll, and it's like, hey, ECW, Vampires!
ECW!
So this is pretty much the start of the era that Vince McMahon wanted for the show, main evented by Bobby Lashley versus The Big Show, straight out of Barely Legal.
Just run through down this December Dismember card, because we all remember the Extreme Elimination Chamber. I just want to run through some of the other stuff that happened on here. Stevie Richards defeated Rene Dupree in a dark match. Main card, Hardys defeated Eminem. Balls Mahoney defeated Matt Stryker in a Stryker's Rules match.
I think Matt Stryker had his own face on his tights, and he got like that wrestler hungry bum that Ahmed Johnson would get, so you can see Matt Stryker's own face disappearing up his flu during the match.
What an incredibly poetic visual.
Elijah Burke and Sylvester...
Tell me how you feel about the brawling. Shut the fuck up!
Elijah Burke and Sylvester Turkey defeated the FBI.
I don't even know how you pronounce it, you wanker.
Sylvester Turkey. There weren't ECW cartoons yet.
Here's a personification of the night. Daivari defeated Tommy Dreamer.
Yep.
Ariel and Kevin Thorne defeated Kelly Kelly and Mike Knox. We'll get to that. And then, of course, yes, Bobby Lashley defeated Big Show, Test, Rob Van Dam, Hardcore Holly, and CM Punk. No Sabu, yeah, of course. Yeah. So this is the next night.
No undefeated streak anymore. It's all gone. It's all gone.
CM Punk, who's... Yes, I was going to say CM Punk was eliminated first, wasn't he? Yep.
By the only other babyface, Rob Van Dam.
Yes.
He was then eliminated by Test, I think.
Yeah. Test eliminated Hardcore Holly and Rob Van Dam.
Just see Vince rubbing his hands together. Right, got them out of the way.
It's lesser of two evils.
The winner is going to be between Test, Big Show, and Bobby Lashley. Enjoy it.
Incredible.
It's fans. So this is the next night. And it's Kelly Kelly's first singles match. She's going to be facing the Vampire Ariel. Taz on commentary. Like, I've, you know, renewed my love of it with AEW. Kelly Kelly walks out and he goes, oh, look at this, right? That's his first words as he walks through. They're very much like builders when women walk past them. She's not smiling. Cheer up.
Cheer up. Love, it might not happen.
Give us a smile, but she apparently is concerned, is what they're putting over about facing Ariel. They get the recap of Knox bailing on her mid-match at December to Dismember. Joey Styles summing up the two personnel in this match. Kelly Kelly's a fun-loving exhibitionist. Ariel's a freak.
They say the word freak like 500 times in this segment. Yeah,
they know what they mean.
Here comes Ariel and Kevin Thorne, Mordecai, as some may know him as. Taz says, oh, I wonder if Ariel's going to sink her teeth into Kelly.
So I got like, my best mate is called Kevin. And I got a lot of very important Kevins in my life, but it's really funny that a vampire was called Kevin.
Thorne's good. The Thorne part's good.
Because I've got mates called Kevin, they have isolated a point that Kevin is used as the butt of jokes, as a punchline name all the time in like cinema and media. So you've got like the naughty kid from Home Alone is Kevin. You've got a psycho kid from that film and book, We Need to Talk About Kevin. Kevin the Teenager from Harry Enfield.
Yeah.
It was the effeminate character in The Thin Blue Line back when it was like homophobia was rife on the BBC.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin, right? Like this was, there's like loads and loads and loads of Kevins. Dorky vampire. They don't know about that one because nobody's watching this.
So Taz says, I wonder if Harry's going to sink her teeth into Kelly. And Joey Styles, in the most Joey Styles thing ever, says, yeah, well, she certainly sunk her fist into Kelly's skull last Sunday. All right, calm down.
Taz's 7-year-old son is watching thinking, I'm going to do this one.
By the way, it's Ariel's entrance I'd forgotten about. So we all have heard of like the Melina entrance or the Beautiful People's entrance from TNA. Ariel rests her ass on the middle rope and then spreads her legs as wide as they can go. And Taz goes, hello.
I didn't notice any entrance.
Kelly, I'd love to know your thoughts on Kelly Kelly's acting here. She's scared. Michael Sidgwick, thoughts?
She looks like she's had a conversation with Kevin Dunn and method acted her way to the ring.
Kevin
she needs to find some tits. That's the legendary quote, isn't it?
Yeah, find some, that's it. The Kevin who earned his name.
Yes.
Kevin Thorne is an ominous presence, sort of lurching towards Kelly Kelly, and then the referee kicks him out and he can't believe this all of a sudden. And then we get to the match. Kelly's still nervous about getting in the ring.
But Brock Dunn, is it? It's Kevin Dunn.
Ariel does her best.
Sorry, any Kevins out there. It's not your fault.
Ariel does her best Penta impression, takes off her gloves. Kelly doesn't look happy. And the match starts with a Thez press from Ariel onto Kelly. And I've written here, some crap punches and a choke.
You cannot do this thing where, like, you know, this would be the wrestlers scared to fight Brock Lesnar and they go in and they just get destroyed. Like, no offense to Ariel, who, like, had a role in wrestling. Salinas in TNA, really great with LAX. She couldn't go. You know, that wasn't what she was known for. She was there as a vampire, but they had nobody else. They needed one serious wrestler to just be like, oh, like, make Kelly Kelly look really frightened. Got a vampire. She'll have to fucking do them, won't she?
Kelly, match is over whilst you've been talking. Kelly Kelly wants to buy a surprise roll-up.
Yeah.
WWE's still alive and well, right, in ECW there. And Taz says, huh? If I had a cap for Kelly Kelly, I'd take it off. And that's what she does.
She's, I mean,
she's just an exhibitionist, isn't she? Anyway, here comes Mike Knox. He's well dressed. He's got a suit jacket on. He's carrying a bunch of roses. Mike, I was about to say Mike today. Joey Styles says, you think that's got a peace offering there? Taz says, well, either that or he works at a florist.
Bet everybody doesn't work blue. It's Taz.
I mean, he might do now. I don't know what Mike Knox is up to.
He gets down on one knee and begins talking to Kelly Kelly and then realises the mic's not turned on. So we start again and he says, Kelly, look, I know you don't want to see me right now. Last night I made a huge mistake, probably the biggest mistake of my life. Kelly, I don't know what I was thinking. You know who I am. I'm a hothead. I want you to know I'd never leave you.
Do it in his voice. You're making it sound like he's got charisma.
Sorry. I want you to know I would never leave you. Kelly, I'm on my knees. Begging you, please forgive me. Checks notes. Please. And he holds out his hand and reluctantly, Kelly Kelly takes it and she puts his hand on his face. She's forgiven him. He says, Kelly, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I waited so long to dumb you. I treated you like a queen. You made me look like a fool, you bitch. No, he didn't say that bit. I've got carried away.
Jesus Christ.
He turned into a comment section briefly there. The truth is, someone like me could never be with someone like you. And he goes to walk away.
Goes he chills. No, what was this? That's a deep cut. Anyway, move on.
Goes to walk away, stops, turns around, and throws the bunch of roses at her. Taz says, son of a bitch, you gotta be kidding me. Whilst he's saying that, Mike Knox grabs Kelly Kelly and Sister Abigail's her.
Yeah. It scans as shocking now, but it wasn't then. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it was very much part of the course.
They were still doing that all the time. Like, Taz's shock over the flowers, as you point out, is more visceral than his shock over the Sister Abigail roll the dice that they gave all them developmental guys that couldn't work a lick at the time. No offense to Bray, but that was probably what I got. like, Taz sounded maybe he got in his head that Mike Knox was a florist. He was like, why would a florist do that? The arrangement took hours.
Taz calls him a rotten bastard. Lee's commentary. I've written to chase him out of the ring. He doesn't. He gets in the ring and Mike Knox slowly gets out of the ring himself.
It's kind of halfway out in the when Taz gets there. I love Taz, but...
Joey Styles reminds us of the moral compass, though, by simply saying, that was wrong of Mike Knox at the end of this segment.
It was probably put in post.
It's one of their favourite things, the certain cadence with which these promos, you know, I'm really sorry. It's like you know what's coming from a million miles away. And that thing is Mike Knox going, psych, you're a whore. Psych, whore. Like, God damn it, he had now, did he?
Not really.
He was just big.
He was in Thingy, wasn't he? Ace
Mike States. Knox walked so Von Wagner could run.
I love you with all my heart. right, so we go to the comment section.
Yeah.
These do not
I love you. That's a bunch of crap.
Love you, Kyle. Kylie.
We go to the comment section. These do not reflect the views of myself, the Dandy Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling.
I never have done.
I feel like this is especially the case today.
Heel Gill writes, man, Kelly Kelly could still be wrestling today. Could she?
Yeah, she was fairly young when she started out.
Yep.
Yeah, if Terry Funk can do it when he's 70, I'm sure Kelly Kelly, who never really took a bump, or even ran the ropes, in fact, could probably give it the old college try.
This, I will say, I picked this one more for the name than the comment. The comment's good, but the name, Edgar Allan Poon.
Honestly, I was already gone because I thought it was going to be Edgar Allan Poo. It's a poo day.
Damn, I miss Kevin Thorne. Dope-ass gimmick. And did you hear the booze? Sounds like someone's doing their job right.
Oh, didn't hear anything.
No, nothing.
Didn't hear a goddamn thing. What is it with a legion of YouTube commenters
yeah.
who love anything vaguely spooky?
Yeah.
I don't get it at all. It passes me by.
I might just read Metal Hammer and be done with it.
I was showing you that one this morning. There was a comment underneath the Alexa Bliss video, which, you know, we'll get to. Like, oh, the goddess is coming back. Somebody diving the reply of that reply straight away saying, Dark Goddess. It's like, what do you fucking need? Like, it's got to be dark, though. It doesn't make any sense. Got to be goth stuff. What's the point of life without goth life? I hate them, me. Have both.
Here's a nice comment for once. It's your girl, Shay. Just writes, Kelly is a very nice person. JAF Films replies, she is. I even met her once. And A replies, yeah. I heard she has no table manners, but overall very nice and charismatic.
Where did he hear that?
Oh, right, final couple of comments. The personification of YouTube comments.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
An online commentary, basically. Once again, they do not reflect the views of myself, Dad, or is there anyone at What Culture Wrestling? Gmont 28 writes, well, to be fair, Knox has got a good point. A girl should only strip for her boyfriend, not other men.
Oh.
And HY, 7 months ago. Simply writes, 15 years later and she still makes me explode.
I love that.
Great one.
The funny thing.
just it's more like a teenager, isn't he, when he's first watching Kelly Kelly, right? So, like, he's come out nearly 30. I have to go on YouTube and tell us that I'm still wanking to the old wrestling. I love it. I love the mindset.
Like, ejaculating with such force. Of ECW on sci-fi that is described as an explosion. Like what Atsushi Anita used to bump on is coming out of your cock.
Well, thanks to Cena underscore 62 for that one. Oh, I want to do more WECW now, or more Kelly Kelly, possibly. Comment sections are an absolute goldmine.
If you insert the names of any two divas into YouTube, right? This is a little. If you want a little like rabbit hole time sink, just type in Tori Wilson Sable.
Mm. Yeah.
YouTube, and just
3,000 comments
and marvel at the decline of Western civilization.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right, we return to a Monday Night Raw with a six women tag match. It is the 24/7 champion Dana Brooke, Rhea Ripley, and Liv Morgan teaming against Tamina, Carmella, and Nikki A.S.H. There was little inset promos with all of them saying, "I'm going to win the Rumble," and me going, "No, you're not. Not one of you." I suppose Ripley did get some shine in this match. Tamina looked absolutely dreadful. There was a spot where they all came in and all hit moves, basically. Tamina knocked Dana Brooke into the corner. Rhea comes in, a bunch of clotheslines. Basement drop kicks hits Tamina. Everything sort of breaks down. In comes Carmella, and she just gets caught in the submission by Rhea Ripley, who defeats her in 2 minutes. And as the babyface team is celebrating, Nikki A.S.H. jumps Rhea Ripley, and no doubt this will be revisited at the Rumble.
Yeah, like as far as Rumble angle fodder went, there's been worse, but it's almost an achievement that WWE can achieve so little with so many wrestlers out there at the same time from a match point of view. I feel like this is probably the thing that like Sidgwick has been struggling with for much longer than I have, but the crowds returning was the point at which I like really lost my love with WWE formula matches. It is just when you're watching something you know exists for another purpose beyond the wrestling match, especially, and you get this a lot on NXT 2.0. If it goes longer than a 2 minute squash, nothing is happening organically. Literally nothing is happening organically. Not even like at this point, if a wrestler slipped or botched, I'd actually think it was folded into what they planned because it feels that robotic. Mm. And I don't think it's particularly on the wrestlers. It's on the system, but nobody gets to achieve as a result.
You haven't said that though. I don't think Tamina Snuka deliberately bumped for a Phantom Rainmaker. She literally did in this match. How useless can you get? Like, I'm trying not, and that's a harsh way of putting it across, but my God.
No, true.
I've seen out like that. She's been in the system.
But it just carries on, doesn't it? Everything just like churns on afterwards. Yeah. Like, nobody reacts. There's no sort of, that was terrible.
Nearly a decade and a half. And it's not as if you're working ambitious matches. It's not as if you're getting, like, Tanahashi's trying to, like, guide you through some kind of selling odyssey. You're just bumping around a bit. That's all you're doing, and you can't even do it.
Bumping around a bit.
Maybe I'm being harsh, and she's studying her Okada tapes, and she's like, oh, just maintain wrist control, so another Rainmaker's coming. So now she's just picking you up from the bloody canvas. That's all she was doing. Stand up.
Who is it who could be like a surprise entrant in the Rumble this weekend. Who was always like praised? It was Mandy Rose, wasn't it? Praised for having this like electric V-trigger. Mandy Rose is going to win the Rumble and then Tamina's going to be like, V-trigger, keep V-triggering me over and over and over again. I've watched this Omega Ricardo match. I know how this goes. They'll go nuts for it.
Right, then we got the Alpha Academy Academic Challenge.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Gable comes out. Gable and Otis are out there first. First of all, great sign. 2+2=4. Otis. Sign of the night for me. I know, you know, we moan about the fact that Becky's got to come out and make the crowd hate her, but Gable is a master at this. He said, well, we're here for the Spelling Bee, first Alpha Academy Academy Challenge.
Spelling Bee. I just labour on how ridiculous this is and just enjoy it, because it's better than their 3.5-star matches.
And he says, tonight is the first in a triad of events. Now, I don't know, people around here won't understand what triad is. That's three things. Tonight, I'm gonna prove my intelligence and Otis's mental prowess. Again, it's getting booed. I don't know why the line... Don't boo education. Gets me every time.
But shush gets me as well. Shush.
He also is going to use this platform to say how proud he is of Otis and the fact that they are going to be entering the Royal Rumble. Out comes Riddle and Orton. And it's revealed that the winners of this Spelling Bee will get to choose next week's challenge. And they begin. Otis goes first, and his first word is Emmental. Like the cheese!
Did he fail to spell it, but it was in the script for him to get it right? I'm sure he dropped an A.
I think you might be right. I think there was a little botch in there.
And there was another one, just, you know, spoiler fun, where he asked for it to be used in a sentence and Kevin Patrick given the definition instead.
Mm. Mm. Bit all over the place.
I ate some Emmental. It's a hard improv, Kevin.
Anyway, Riddle's up next. He gets the word calibration, and he says, calibration? Good.
No.
And he says, can you give me an example, or like you say, give me the definition. And then he says, can you give me the letters for it? That got me as well. And then he goes, oh, actually, I get it. Like when I calibrate my scales for
weightlifting, yeah,
for smoking marijuana.
Oh, right, not lifting dumbbells. I don't know. That's such a hard word. But is that not the scales you were talking about?
Anyway, Riddle nails it. Chad Gable's up next, and this is just a masterpiece of how to be a dickhead heel who's far too cocky for his own good. He gets the words disillusion, and he says, he laughs it off, piece of piss this, he says, go on, give me the definition, and Kevin Patrick starts doing, he's like, no, I know what it is. I've got a 4.0 GPA, but he spells disillusion. And he gets the old buzzer. Ah, sorry, wrong.
I sympathise with Chad Gable here, you know, because I thought Kevin Patrick said this illusion.
He's annoyed. He's annoyed with Kevin Patrick, Chad Gable. Orton steps up. He's fired up, tells Gable to take a freaking seat. He says, go on, give me my word. And Kevin Patrick proceeds by saying, a word often spelled incorrectly. Don't know why he felt the need to put that in, but he got dumbbell. He spelt it right. The look on Riddle's face is an absolute picture. And then Orton says, shut up, Gable, because Gable's just flipping out again. Face me one-on-one, and I will beat you tonight. And I can even spell it out for you, the three most devastating letters in the alphabet. RKO. We'll talk about the match in a second, but this was great stuff, Hamlet.
Fantastic. What was it called? The Alpha Academy Challenge. See, if they'd have promoted it as a spelling bee, obviously that wouldn't have... Like, that's what we got in the end.
Yes.
It wasn't anything more than a spelling bee. But good that they promoted it as this, because I was reasonably hyped, and then they kind of over-delivered when they reduced it. Really funny. Chad Gable is not just really great with his scripted lines, as like the shoosh and the other stuff. His instincts are great for this as well, as they've always been. That's how he gets all these acts over. It's just that his wrestling instincts, well, his sports entertainment instincts are as fantastic as his wrestling ones are.
He's quite good at wrestling as well, isn't he? Yeah.
I think it'd be unfair to say that he carried it, because everybody contributed, but it's so cool to watch somebody that you really like be the spine of a segment that Vince McMahon really likes.
Yeah.
It gives you that warm feeling that for a little while, he's going to be a Vince guy, and it means you get to watch him. And like, the match is for us. Everything we just got was for Vince. Every now and then, the thing that for Vince is also quite good. And this was the perfect coming together of all those things.
I thought the disillusion thing was halfway inspired. It made the heel look like a bloviating dickhead.
Mm.
And I tell you what, this sounds like a facetious take. It legitimately isn't. Matt Riddle, the Man and the Performer, is literally so stupid that for me, I felt such a genuine suspense on can he correctly recite the word he's been told and in fact practiced spelling? Can he actually remember to do it?
Mm.
More than
my heart was in my mouth.
The comparison, CM Punk was asked to recite the alphabet backwards.
Oh my God, I remember
he
that.
Managed that. You're asking Riddle to spell one word.
And, there's more suspense in him reading from a script, a practiced script, than there was most matches on this TV show. I was like, oh, I'd love it if he messed this up. It would be piss funny if he actually botched to the complete detriment of it. It would go completely off the rails.
Ask it where he could just scoot away, is it? Like, he'd just be stood in the middle of the room. Oh, God.
Your word, to make it easier the second time around, is weed. Can you spell that? Yeah. Then we got the match, Orton versus Gable. Enjoyed this as well. Orton in control, drops Gable on the announce table. But after he's dealing with Otis on the apron, Gable gets in a chop block, follows that up with a moonsault, and targets the leg and the ankle of Randy Orton. He also drops him leg first onto the announce table as we go through a break. When we come back, Orton makes his comeback, hits a backbreaker, hits the draping DDT, sets up for an RKO. Riddle tries to take out Otis at ringside. He was about to jump up on the apron, but Otis suplexes him. That distracts Orton, who gets rolled up, but he kicks out. He hits a power slam. He gets a two count. He sets up for the punt. Gable counters beautifully into an ankle lock. But in the midst of all this, Riddle attacks Otis with his scooter, just batters him with it. Orton slips out of the ankle lock, kicks Gable into the turnbuckle, who comes back, gets hit with the RKO. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Riddle gets on the mic and announces that because they won, they can announce the next challenge. They can pick the next challenge for next week. It's going to be a scooter race, and that they cut to Otis's little face. And yeah, loved all this as well.
How can you not get excited about a scooter race when they've now given you the bit of trust that they can do the silly stuff really well? 2 weeks in the spin they've done this. Match was tremendous. Fans being there for Randy Orton week on week on week is almost undermining an entirely correct take that we've had about him for 20 years being boring as sin.
It is them who are wrong.
It's a real problem, this, because they've been hot for him for weeks. And it's like, oh, this isn't ideal. Like, I've been, like, moaning about Randy Orton as long as I've been permitted to
talk.
Hey,
look, if Jake Hager can do it, hot tag, and so bloody Randy Orton, Jesus Christ, not hard.
And Chad Gable, I like, of course, he, you know, adds this to any match he's got, but good snap on Chad Gable. Unbelievable snap on Chad Gable that just really elevates even the bits that threaten to get drab about Randy Orton can't when they're with Chad Gable. And he very rarely has that chemistry with people. And when he does, you like to watch him wrestle them. So zero complaints about this at all.
I moan about WWE's version of good wrestling. I moan about rematches. I moan about wrestling for wrestling's sake on WWE TV when they don't really care about it and it's so painfully obvious. I, however, would watch a best of 17 series with Chad Gable versus literally anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know how he does this in such a short amount of time. He's got that Tanahashi Bryan, like, time-space continuum ability to warp where he can just do things in such a small time frame so well that you just think, why is everybody else wasting my time when he can do it like this?
Time for another Alexa Bliss segment. She's gone to visit the psychiatrist.
Another disappointingly rubbish thing.
Mm-hmm. He says she's getting better. She's wearing mostly black this time around. And he wants to talk to her about Lily and the history there. She talks about when she first met her. She was 6 years old. These teenage girls would pick on her. She was playing on the monkey bars and these girls shoved her and she was unconscious. When she woke up, Lily was there. Lily told her that she'd taken care of the girls. They'd never come back, not to worry about it. She continued talking and they just went, yeah, meh, 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 meh. They just cut back. It was really weird, this.
Yeah. So the implication is they've discovered the root of a trauma in childhood. Mm-hmm. She was bullied and she was teased and she's manifested a doll, potentially killed two innocents.
Yeah, or the doll did. She's not sure if it was her or the
Because the doll actually can kill.
Well, we know this. Chased Shayna Baszler.
But the idea is, I think in this narrative, I can't believe I'm analysing it earnestly, is that they've discovered the root of her delusions and it's the childhood trauma of being bullied, which is a great thing to make light of.
How the Fiend got to her. I know what I'll do. I'll get the doll that reminds her of all the childhood trauma. Then she'll be on my side.
The Fiend literally groomed.
Yep.
Alexa Bliss, and it was a storyline, and it happened, and they didn't realise because they thought, oh, it's good, she can be spooky horror stuff. It's like, they don't realise it's because of the implication. You've groomed someone on telly, you stupid c***s.
More than one take on this. Because people are obviously really obsessed with elements of Alexa Bliss's run. Her hair was back unfurled into the normal pigtails, and you mentioned about the outfit as well. This has got more people believing that we are headed back to regular Alexa Bliss.
Good.
Is that...
They just drop out the like all the time. Why do I need this?
Like, they could just drop the cat. They could have brought her back at the Rumble, having done none of these. Like, Alexa Bliss is back, and you go, cool.
Oh, thank God.
She's got that weird thing out of the system. That's good. But if we're doing it this way instead, it's so strange the things that they insist on applying detail to compared to the stuff they don't.
Mm. No, we got to get people back up to speed with this.
Otherwise, it won't make sense how she once made Randy Orton cough up goo and then sat on his face. Like,
maybe it's the secret non-suit scripting and all this stuff. That's going to be goodbye, wank.
Still makes me explode.
Bruce Pritchard leaving the comment. He loves Kane stuff so much that one of the products of his explosion, his son, is actually called Kane, right?
Why can't just make horror films and get out of my life?
This is that, isn't it? Like, oh, we need stuff with a doll. Bruce is rubbing his hands thinking, get in, childhood trauma, doll kills too. Like, this is, they did a book, WWE did an in-house book that tried to tell, there were so many frayed ends with the Kane Undertaker story. They did a book.
Did they?
Like, we're going to make this all make sense. And it was like, I bet Bruce Pritchard saw it. I was like, well, I do not like that. Let me tell you, I can't go anywhere with this now. You've closed all these loops.
What was good was another segment with Vince McMahon next. Austin Theory goes in to visit him. Theory sort of leans on him to get maybe a later number in the Rumble. Your 26s, your 27s, your 29s, maybe. And Vince goes, "What are you gonna do?" He's back on form again this week. What's that? He said he basically didn't have any influence on the numbers, and he should be concerned about his opponent tonight, AJ Styles, to which Theory responds by just listing his Wikipedia accolades.
Did he wrestle him? Have I imagined that? Have they not already had a match?
Yeah. They literally showed the clip of him racing when Grayson Bloody Waller.
God damn it, man. Like, oh, well, I know all about him. Yeah, I know, you've done it. We've all done it.
He says he's ready, and Vince hands him back his phone and says, "Give me a fucking good selfie." In the match. Which he didn't. So there's a write that down for the preview next week.
Fucking I love it. When you're taking this off, why do I get the picture developed?
It was a bit... Vince was too...
Where's the fucking piece of paper? Shake it, does it dry quicker? Like that.
He was a bit too clear.
My fucking snappy snaps.
Too clear for my liking, this week.
Fucking Kodak moment.
Did you ever see that bit? George Michael, rest in peace, loved him. But did you ever see when he crashed his car into the side of a Snappy Snaps?
Yeah.
And, like, obviously the car was taken away. And the next day, some graffiti artist wrote, "Wham!" on it. Love George Michael. But I always really love that whenever somebody wrote a Snappy Snaps sort of thing.
bit of an update for you, Sige. Veer Mahal still coming.
It's going to get the gush.
Veer Mahan's still exploding.
Still biding his time. I've told so many people that thing you told us. He's coming. Biding his time. Just see, I'll look what they've said this week. Is he coming or is he biding his time?
Oh, they've changed the copy. It's more like WWE.com copy, if I recall.
Oh, that's no fun. Veer Mahan. Oh, sorry. Veer Mahan's eyes are locked on the prize.
What prize?
Anyway, right, then we did get AJ Styles versus Austin Theory, which, to be fair, was great. Styles in control early on, shrugs Theory off, drop kicks him out to the floor and does a slingshot forearm out there to take him out early on. He's in control, pushes Theory off the top rope, but Theory comes back with a rolling drop kick, knocking Styles outside the ring, which was just spectacular. We go to a break. When we come back, Styles is attempting to make a comeback, but Theory hits a backbreaker. Styles, though, hits a springboard inverted DDT, strikes a neck breaker, a sliding forearm. This gets a near fall for him. Theory responds, hitting a back elbow and a back suplex and a rolling blockbuster, which was just great as well for a near fall. Goes for a superplex. Styles slips out, though. Hits him with a Pele kick. They trade counters. Styles eventually puts the calf crusher on Austin Theory, but he eventually manages to get to the ropes. As Styles goes for the phenomenal forearm, Theory shoves him off the top rope, and he takes a rough bump. He tries to make a cover with his feet on the ropes, Austin Theory, but the referee spots him. Goes for the ATL. Styles slips out. Phenomenal forearm. Styles get the victory. This was some brilliant stuff from these two, I thought.
Yeah, really good. Austin Theory's, if not his best match on the main roster, which it probably is, certainly his best match in this Vince run. I wasn't really feeling it with Finn Balor. Certainly not in the way that I think you were supposed to.
No.
I wasn't really taking any of that. AJ Styles is the weirdest guy because he's spent the last year basically trying to carry this tag team idea, this Omos idea, and that's what his skills are being used for. But WWE is strange, so you just forget about that now. Like, he lost the match, he lost the feud. Friendship never happened, just carry on. What AJ Styles got when he's got nothing going on? Phenomenal pro wrestler. I think I'm starting to think that he's better out of storylines than in them because all he has to do is, like, flick the autopilot wrestler switch, and he has a match like this. There's as little creative invested in AJ Styles now than there has been probably in the last 2 or 3 years. And he put on a kind of, like, maestro veteran performance for the benefit of a young guy that he's trying to help elevate. Like, sterling stuff. Fair play to everybody involved.
Yeah, I can't... there's no jokes, there's no snide, there's no sarcasm. This is stellar. This is really, really stellar work. I generally thought I was in the impact zone watching this. Like, the energy with which it was worked, as if AJ Styles has genuinely had a little bit of the... a bit of competition within himself. Like, I want to prove that I've still got something here. I've been saddled with a moss. I've tried my best. I've kind of faded out of view as like an elite level talent. He was like, nah, I'm class. And he just decided to show it. There was a 2 minute prolonged sequence here, counter upon counter upon counter, which is just liquid professional wrestling that would not be out of place in any great promotion that still has pro wrestling as its calling card. No right to be as good as this. They might have something in Austin Theory after all.
Yeah,
and then you see him act and they probably don't.
That rolling dropkick and the rolling blockbuster. Oh, wonderful stuff. Yeah, really, really exciting.
It's on, just on the Vince thing. So by like in any other time other than weird 2022 WWE, you think, well, he's having good matches and he's getting what they believe to be the rub with this stuff on Vince. Like, maybe this is going somewhere. Maybe there's a WrestleMania plan. But it's 2022 WWE. They could just drop it. He could, like, Vince could tell him he's got him a number for the Rumble, and then the gag that we've all pitched at various different times, wait a minute, you're not Austin. Austin didn't have hair. And then it turns out it's for Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it's just as wacky as that, and that's it. Like, Austin Theory's entire run this last month of what we've been doing, everything since the egg is just over and dropped.
I was about to say, what if he turns around on the night, and we see him backstage, and he's like,
oh, you didn't give me that fucking selfie, but I like what you did out there, so... I went and got a special number for you.
And you know, like these, I love the little tombola thing, yeah.
And he goes, oh, I went and got it motherfucking self. He goes, here you go, kid.
He goes, what's this?
It's a fucking number.
He goes, this is a number. This is an
egg.
And he's not in the Rumble.
It's probably the fucking Alex, but... Oh, might as well fucking scramble it for me.
Like your brain, Vince.
Just like that, bro.
Right, then we got a...
How close are we to the main event? I scrolled
too long. Long.
God damn
long. Just the 8 segments.
We can get through
Wrap
this.
It up.
Yeah. It's Becky Lynch. Indeed, you have. They do a little promo off setting up their match. They're in separate rooms. Don't worry. They're kept apart, obviously. Jimmy Smith goes to ask the challenger a question first. Becky Lynch is furious about this. She wants to be asked first. She's Becky Lynch at the end of the day. She talks about how Doudrop idolized her. Doudrop talks about how Becky Lynch is talking a load of bollocks here. He's trying anything, pick the new girl to fight for the title because that'll be easy and I'll be able to hold on to my championship. The only thing that's going to be easy is how easy Doudrop's going to break her ribs. Becky said, oh, I heard what you said there. I didn't hear a single thank you. You should thank me for giving the biggest batch of your career. You wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me. Of course I had to slap you. You weren't showing me any respect. And then last week I was leading you through this match. We had the match won, and then you have to go and splash me and do what you do and leave me laying. Look, I'm going to beat that ass at the Rumble. And then Piper says, I wasn't listening, if I'm perfectly honest. She's doing whenever you start doing that whiny, naggy thing, I sort of zone out because you just piss me off. I'll show you some gratitude when you show me some respect. There's the whole Van Goat. Yep. Bollocks that Becky was doing. Becky is not a goat. Write this down. She is a lamb on the way to the slaughter. Becky tells her to know her place. Doudrop says, okay, and takes the mic off and walks off. And as Becky's cutting a promo talking about how she's been the champion for 3 years, no one's been able to take this belt off her. Piper just walks in and attacks her. Big brawl. Referees pull him apart. Oh, he's eyeing up. Do you want the other page?
Yeah.
Okay. Your other options are there.
Wait there. No. Oh, man.
I'm watching this. What's it all waiting for?
You've got to press, so you got to press one of these relating to that.
All right. I really need a piss, come on.
Anything you want to say about this?
I just think AEW should borrow this. Somebody attacking from the side of the screen. It's a very, very original and innovative idea, and I think they should use it on Rampage.
We got an interview with the Mysterios.
Can you do Kevin Patrick doing Mark Henry? Just the Irish accent.
Okay. Come on, Patrick. Well, it looks like we've had enough talk. It's time for the main event.
Sarah Schreiber is chatting with the Mysterios, putting Ray over being a cover star of the new 2K game.
This is funny.
Referencing Austin, Rock, Cena, Undertaker. Ray said, you know, how proud he was to be on there. And maybe his son Dominic would be on the cover one day. And he... Dominic says it'd be an honor after playing all those games when he was a kid. And maybe I can do it after I win the Rumble. And Ray says, well, you're not going to win the Rumble. Obviously, you have to eliminate me. And he goes, yeah, I'll eliminate you. I'll eliminate you first, if anything.
The irony is that Dominic Mysterio looks like everyone in a first third-person shooter. Looks like incredibly generic blockhead.
Hey, well, hang on. It's all right. It's all right.
But the big takeaway here, another breadcrumb in the story.
The best story in the game. Oh, these two are useless. I love that we booked this story all the more because of how bad they are at delivering the lines that are going to get us there, because I'll take a few weeks of this. Dad, I'm not a bigger star as you, but I'm going to build my legacy. It's like, nobody believes a word you're saying, Dominic. I believe that as much as I believe Ray saying, this game is fire. Piss off.
It does look fire, to be fair.
So I can imagine Dominic playing as a kid, as Eddie Guerrero. And then I can totally picture it. Yeah, look, we always said, I don't want to take the piss with this. I don't want to labour a point because I never brought this up before. But we always said the Royal Rumble 2022 was going to be.
We said it.
Cedric's got his phone out because he's writing it down. He's taking a note that we always said it. and yeah, I'm glad that they are keeping to the path that we paved.
And it was sort of reiterated here. I mentioned earlier there was a pointless women's match to promote the Rumble. This was a pointless men's match to promote the Rumble. I will say, for a match with, for now, Mysterio's won to beat the Street Profits. That Montez Ford dive, where he literally did a Superman pose, great. Bonkers.
What I love about Montez Ford is how much he loves to do that. So this has been the case now for months. It's unfair, really, isn't it? Because Angelo Dawkins is pretty great. Right, but unfortunately, Montez Ford has become that like headline grabbing member of a tag team, and I don't really know what you do with that because the like Montez Ford in particular is working, understanding what happens to tag teams in WWE. Street Profits have been together ages, and it's quite impressive how long they managed to stick at it together. But Montez Ford in particular is working like a guy who knows that the only route to long term success in his company is to break off from the team and be the Sean and not the Marty like that. And Angelo Dawkins is going to be stuck with that, I think. Despite, I think he's leveled up too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the Street Profits have genuinely improved. I don't know, like, it's hard to improve on WWE's main roster, but they look and feel like bigger stars than they were in NXT. They've made the jump and it's stuck. But Montez Ford just works for that singles push. When it comes, the split won't, be that much of a surprise because you've sort of watched him elevate in his game.
I was torn here because I'm watching Montez Ford do that goddamn Superman pose in midair. It's ridiculous, and I'm thinking, are you a knacker for not saving that for Mania? Or is the fact that you're capable of doing things like that and making a memory from Monday Night Raw, does that mean you should be doing something more at WrestleMania? Either way, that just struck me as something incredible.
Yeah, it's sensational. In the rest of the match, you know, they do the old double 619 spot, but one of them gets pulled out of the ring. Ray goes for a single 619 on Montez Ford, but the distraction has allowed him to recover. He catches it, but in the end, Ray rolls him up for the victory. Post-match, Dominic tries to chuck his dad out of the ring, but Ray, with the old nouse that he's got, reverses it. He gets eliminated. And then Montez Ford chucks Ray out of the ring. Dawkins chucks out Montez Ford and says, I had to. And then the Dirty Dogs show up. Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode chuck Dawkins out of the ring. They all get in there and chuck out Ziggler and Roode. They're all in the Rumble, basically. But we haven't seen Dominic eliminate his dad, even in a practice, yet.
How have you got the energy? And let's move on.
Very briefly, then we will get to the main event. We had Kilpatrick again chatting with Seth freaking Rollins, who literally just said, I'll show up on SmackDown on Friday. I like to deliver my messages in person. I'll see Roman then, basically. And then we got Maryse's big birthday party extravaganza. with presents and balloons and all that bollocks in the ring. Out comes Miz, winds the crowd up and then introduces Maryse. They've got security splashed out, no expense spared to protect from any involvement. He even said, I did like this touch, that he had his security check the roof for effectively for goo. So that wasn't going to happen. Out comes Maryse. She unveils her first...
NYPD goo.
First present. It's a beautiful portrait of the two of them, which she says is better than her kids or having her kids or whatever it was. The second one was a sort of sparkly clutch bag that symbolises their love for one another. They have a kiss. This audience is getting proper riled up right now. And then he says, look, open another gift. Open that big one there. I assume you got that for me, actually, because I didn't get it for you. And she says, well, I didn't buy you a gift. And there's the sudden panic. We've all seen this before. A giant human-shaped present. Oh, my God. It's Edge and Beth Phoenix. They're going to be out there, and they're going to jump out Miz and Maryse. Psych! No, it's a brick. The brick's in there. He got a security to open it. It tickled me pink, this. He got a security to open it for them with panic in their eyes and then swerve. They got the audience. It's just a... It's a brick in a box. and then he wants everyone in the audience to stand and sing for Maryse. And just before they play the music, he did get a great reaction when he said, don't boo, like that. They sing, of course. Edge comes out, interrupts all of it with Beth Phoenix, tells him to cut the music. He said, look, you can be as clever as you like, blah, blah, blah. But all this security is not going to help you come Saturday. We're pissed
come
off.
Come Saturday.
We're pissed off with what you did because they'd already shown the clip of Beth Phoenix getting laid out by Maryse's brick last week. And they do the old... it always reminds me for some reason of the McMahons. You remember when the McMahons kicked the shit out of security? I know Trips was there as well. But when it was just like... Shane was just like, yeah, I think I'm an ass kicker now. Come here, Keith Lee. Bang, down you go. Oh, indubitably.
It's my great honour.
So yeah, they beat up all the security. Miz and Maryse bail. They hit a spear. They hit a 3D. I think there's a heart attack in there. And in the end, Edge grabs one of the security guys and power bombs him through the table with all the presents. Bloody good sports entertainment, this, I thought.
I agree. The brick payoff was funny. The Edge and Beth Phoenix thing wasn't hack rubbish. They've just got to get through this wall of security that the heels have put in front of them. They've already done the hack rubbish, so they had to acknowledge it at the start of this segment. We've done the goo in this angle. Not even just Edge did. Yeah. Edge did that last year to Seth. I'm thinking like that. No, it's happened in this storyline. So I like it when they're so inept that they have no choice but to mock themselves to get something else over, and that's what this was. This is why I like The Miz. Him singing Happy Birthday to a crowd that he knew he had was sublime. Like, it's... WWE... Why they troll their audience so much because I think they think all the heels are this. Like, the fans were enjoying hating this. This was a pleasurable two-way experience rather than the hum of the Royal Rumble 2015, for example. You know, they think it's one thing, but it's actually the other. But when it's good, it's good. And this didn't feel important, but then I don't think the mixed target on Sunday is supposed to either. It was just, like...
In the moment they named it the It Couple versus the Grit Couple.
Like, they kind of, like, sold out any attempt to make this feel serious. So they've done this instead. I enjoyed this.
Wasn't bad at all. It's not my favourite thing. Havlat's got way more latitude to both The Miz and sports entertainment. But just to cap off, The Miz is really quite good at sports entertainment. Yeah. So, you know, if I gave a toss about it, I might have liked it. it was well done.
Yeah. Well, let us know your thoughts.
It's been like 8 hours and I still didn't think a brick in a box and Wilborn got it. So, you know, like, this was still worth it.
Let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at...
I'm never going to leave that frigging button down. At M Sidgwick. Just poking at the actual picture of the button. There's 8 buttons right there.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCulture.
How do I press a button?
Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, where on iTunes and Spotify, you can leave us a 5-star review, just like Cena_62 did. And we'll be back later on today with our NXT 2.0 preview. But for now, my thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.